expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Being Found Show, your terrestrial radio help for being found in a digital online market. You got to give me a break here while I fix my microphone. I'm your host, Chauncey Haworth, and this is my other host, Jake.
I'm the co-host, yes.
You are the co-host. So the show's all about helping you and your business really gain some traction online. I understand that that can be difficult. Both Jake and I are in the business of doing such. And so we get people calling us, telling us how difficult it is. So
right.
I understand that. And, you know, a lot of people need it. Basically, if you own a business and you're out there and you're not out there, if you're out there but not out there.
If you're out there and not being found where you need to be.
Right.
We're the show for you.
Right. And the question is, you know, if you're not being found, who is? You know, probably your nearest competitor. So, you know, at the beginning of the show here, I figured we'd talk a little bit about the news. It's been kind of a crazy news for tech and business here. You know, the first big thing in the news is there's, as is so often with the news, there is contrasting articles about this topic. And it's basically, this article here is Microsoft calls for regulation on facial recognition software, saying it's just too risky to leave to the tech industry alone, that it's privatized. But on the same side, there are employee protests at Google and Microsoft and Amazon, because I forget which one. I think actually Amazon is talking about selling the technology to the government. That's still ham radio. All right, so, you know, when you get to the point of marketing and really who you're paying for, you know, in SEO, this is something that we think about a lot, because traffic is important to who you have on your site, because, you know, if you get a bunch of traffic that's not interested, they're just going to bounce out of there, and Google's going to say this site didn't help anybody. You know, so targeting specific demographics is something that we definitely pay attention to. A great tool, man. Facebook is definitely in the news for collecting information that people don't want. But if you turn around and you're a business owner, it means that you can use that information to target for ads. And for those of you who don't know, you don't get any personal information from people. It's very vague, so it's not like you're collecting that stuff. But here we're talking about generations. And my wife has her bachelor's in sociology. She's all about this stuff. She just kind of sucks it up. And she's reading me this article the other day about Generation Z as we're talking about our kids. And Generation Z is really the newest generation that's entering the workforce. You know, everybody thinks it's millennials. But so Generation Z is born in or after 1995, so they wouldn't be any older than 23 right now. A millennial is a person reaching young adulthood in the early 21st century. So you could be born in 1980 and you'd be a millennial, because you'd be 20 at the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is what this is a hot topic around my group of friends. They'll just be all like, oh, that's not a millennial. This is a millennial. It's like, it's like the discussion about, like, where does Northern California start?
Right. Right.
You know, is San Francisco Northern California?
Depends on
what about San Jose? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so millennials, that millennials are digital natives, where Generation Z is really what's now kind of a cloud native. So a digital native grew up with the internet, grew up in the digital age. These new people are growing up in a world of the digital age, but with the cloud. For those of you who don't know what the cloud is, good luck. Have lots of discussions with family members trying to explain to them what the cloud is. And it's really not that hard. What the cloud is you remember before when you download an MP3 or something and you had it on your phone? That's not the cloud. When you download an MP3 and it's now stored on your Google Drive and you can listen to it from any device, that's the cloud. It basically means that your information is stored somewhere that you can get it from any device by going online. Mm-hmm. That's all. So I found a lot of these statistics really, really sort of interesting. So most, I don't know. There's just so much trash talk about millennials, so I'm not really sure how to, you know, address it. But I don't think millennials deserve all the trash talk that they get because this is their world. You know, we're everybody can talk about how, like, this, that, and the other thing sucks, but I'm going to be dead someday, and the world's going to be full of millennials. You know, so we kind of got to give them a break here.
I should say thank you. I'm quite clearly a millennial, no matter which way you shake it.
You're a millennial?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. 85. 85, you yeah. are a millennial.
Yep.
Oh, man.
I know.
So you appreciate these things I'm saying about you, Jake?
Well, you know, I appreciate the fact that you don't outright dislike me.
I am Generation X, which is like straight up the snarkiest, rudest, most dissatisfied of generations. But we'll get into that on a different show. So here's the difference between Generation Z and millennials. Run it down. Think about these things when you're marketing. You know, I'm not saying think about it just to market towards Generation Z. You know, you'd have to have a pretty specific product set to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about your demographics while doing that. So Generation Z and millennials, the average hours a week that Gen Z uses a smartphone is 15.4 and millennials is 14.8. So a little bit more for Generation Z.
Mm-hmm.
The average time on a desktop for Gen Z, 10.6. For millennials, 16.4. There's a big gap there, big drop. TV is down for Generation Z about an hour and a half, you know. So I'm really not surprised by that stuff. But if you look at it, the average – so television usage, this market where we've been doing our advertisement where – It's really kind of turning into the phone book of mm-hmm. of media entertainment because, like, baby boomers are watching 24 hours a week on the average. Generation Z, 13, you know?
Yeah.
So it is just, like, literally dropping drastically.
And if you didn't catch that, also, smartphone usage is 50% higher than laptop usage among Gen Z. So if you don't already have a mobile-ready site,
More than half the traffic. We passed that.
Yeah.
More than half of the traffic coming to your website is from mobile devices. Mm-hmm. So I'll digress here a little bit, and you might be saying, well, what does that mean for me as long as my stuff's there? People calling you from a mobile device are looking for something different. And if you're having a hard time wrapping your brain around that, here is my explanation. If I'm sitting at home on my couch and I look up a tow truck, chances are I have some beater in my yard. I'm thinking about getting rid of it. A friend called me, need some help, mm-hmm. blah, 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 something non-time sensitive. If I'm looking up tow truck from a phone, chances are I need a tow truck now.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's just a really good example of the different intentions that people are having when they search from a different device, you know. All right, so Generation Z and millennials. No surprise, Facebook is down. I'm not surprised about that. Facebook has been going down with regular usage, but it's by far not dead because people are still using it to create accounts. I'm guessing all these Gen Zs still have Facebook accounts,
mm-hmm.
and Facebook, just like everybody else, is learning to market people in different ways off of their site, you know, pixel tracking and stuff like that.
Yeah, what's a little bit interesting, I don't see any of the ones that they're going to as having an outstanding lead. I mean, Facebook has an outstanding lead in the social media market area, and the young kids who are switching over, there's five or six that they're switching to, and none of them have a commanding lead. Each one does a different function.
Right,
and they seem to be sharing that.
Right, yeah, they do, and that's kind of weird that, you know, a prime example of the shift in the way that people think is that maybe 10 years ago, we were all looking for an app that had it all. We were all looking for a website mm-hmm. that had it all. Can we put it all in there? And really, a lot of these things, with Facebook being down, Instagram is up. Snapchat is up. You know, I'm not even sure why Vine's on here, but YouTube is up. Google Plus is down. That's not shocking. And then Twitter is running about the same. So what we're really seeing here is that instead of people wanting one app that does everything, they really like their little specified stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and the world kind of went back that way, you know. Music is a great comparison for this. I guess I used music last segment, but I'm going to use it again. If you look at music and it's sort of like underground versus corporate, now in the world of the internet, it might be a little bit different. But if you look historically, it tended to go like sort of corporate sales, and then people had enough, and it went way underground. And then corporate sales, people had enough, and it went, like, way underground. So you know, you had punk, and then you had, like, 80s hair metal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the Backstreet Boys, and then you had, like, Nirvana. So you were getting, like, this sort of wave of, we've had enough of that. Everybody rebels against the previous generation,
yeah.
so I'm sure that's a factor, you know. So we might see the Everything app come back around.
Maybe.
The Everything app. Millennials and Gen Z are actively avoiding ads. Young men in particular are early adopters of ad blocking software, which has 45 million users in the U.S., 41% increase in the past 12 months, and 15% market penetration. I am not surprised that these millennials, as they are tech savvy, plus, you know, throughout my life, my kids are millennials. They're not Gen Z, but a lot of my ad blocking skills have come from my kids
mm-hmm.
basically coming in as I'm listening to Pandora and they're just like, why are you listening to ads? And I'm all like, what?
Yeah. I think part of that is just, we were raised before ad blocker. Mm-hmm. So it's like, no, that's just the way it is.
Right.
I mean, no one ever complained about commercials 20 years ago on TV. That's just the way it was.
Totally. And for those of you wondering why young men are better at blocking ads than young women, well, you can go ahead and use your imagination on that. All right. So, you know, hopefully this sort of gives you a little bit of insight into the fact that these generations are all very different from one another. Your product applies to one of them. Your service applies to one or several of them. And make sure you're not marketing to people who are not buying your stuff. You're listening to the Being Found Show. Come on back.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
If you're looking into a remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio, there's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite and Things.
Now, this is Carl Bott. Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with.
Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days while Linda and I went on vacation. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard, Estate Granite and Things, or visit us at estategranite.com.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Imagine living in a planned community that features a regional park for you and your family to enjoy, plus walking trails, fabulous open spaces, and so much more. You can find all of this, plus the designer home you've always dreamed of at Chastina Ranch. Built by Palomar Builders, your ultimate home. Chastina Ranch is located just off Airport Road on Shastaview. Homes in Chastina Ranch feature green technology, water-conserving toilets, faucets, and showerheads, energy-efficient LED lighting, and programmable irrigation systems. Distinctive exterior features including 30-year composite roofing in a variety of colors, designer entry doors, and of course with Palomar Builders, exceptional interiors. Plans including 9-foot and 10-foot ceilings throughout. Beautiful designer kitchens with granite slab countertops and full tile backsplash. To see Chastina Ranch, just take Airport Road to Shastaview. For more information, contact Rhonda Culp of Coldwell Banker CNC Properties at 949-8613. Palomar Builders, your ultimate home.
Welcome back to the Being Found Show. We're talking about business and helping your small and medium-sized business get found on the web better. Because hopefully you're already somewhat involved with that. And if you're not somewhat involved with that, congratulations for being in business. It's really impressive. You know, it really is. You know, for a business to survive now and to have any sort of, like, growth, sustainability, mm-hmm. or reliability to not be online, I'd be really impressed.
Well, I mean, I think over the last 15 to 20 years, a lot of businesses have depended on, you know, there's still a lot of word of mouth. They've got a good reputation.
Oh, that's true. They have their client lists from, you know, previous.
Yeah, but you won't see up-and-comers making it the way they're able to survive.
Yeah.
And you won't see that happening for another 20 years like
that's
it has been.
True, yeah. And so that's actually kind of what we wanted. Jake and I were talking this week about covering, you know, the online marketing process from start to finish, and like, where do we start with this? You know, like, how do you start with this? Do you start by discussing the phone call? Do you start by this? So I was sort of thinking you need to start with getting the right mindset, mm-hmm. of really sort of understanding what a growing business is. And my buddy Steve Marsh, he does this sort of like business coaching for carpet cleaners. And so he was a successful carpet cleaner and a single truck carpet cleaner. And so later he started doing marketing, and he has hundreds of clients around the country that he helps market their single truck carpet cleaning businesses. Mm-hmm. And he says that any small business that's sort of growing is basically split into four divisions. You got strategy, operations, business, and customers. So strategy would be sort of your plans and who you are. Operations would be the day-to-day tasks. Business would be, you know, making sure that the structure is in place, that you pay your bills and you do all that stuff. And customers would be gaining new customers. Mm-hmm. You know? But he says that the number one thing that he sees small and medium-sized business do is concentrate so heavily on operations.
Mm-hmm.
Because operations is an easily quantifiable number. I do the work, I get the money.
Yep.
You know, and I understand that bottom line, we all need to do the work and get the money, or there's no pants for our children. You know, that's the one I've been using over the years because, you know, when my kid was a baby, you know, you get free pants. And then diapers, you're all, man, diapers are expensive. And then they get older, and they, like, literally pants is, like, an awesome gauge of, like, how expensive kids can get over time. Because now my daughter's pants collection is, you know, she might have six pairs of pants in there, and it's probably worth $400 in pants.
Yeah, I'm still in the diaper phase, so.
Well, you'll grow out of
you're
it,
not
Jake.
For my kids.
Right. All right, so, you know, really the goal of the mindset here is to take a little bit of time out of your day and bring yourself out of just thinking about operations. And I know it's hard. You get tired at the end of the day, you know, especially if you're doing something physical or you're doing something where you're on your feet all day long. Or if you're like me and you do something where you think all day long, you know, there comes a point where I'm just all, nope. Brain is not thinking of nothing. It like goes on strike, you know, it's just not going to happen. So if you can carve out a little bit of time where you have some ability to think outside of operations. And so how does one really think outside of operations? I would say focus on strategy and customers. Chances are your business aspect is doing good. You have some sort of foundation because that tends to be sucked up into operations. You know, I do the billing. I collect the bill. You know, that's kind of sucked up in there in the money. The part that gets abstract is when you're thinking about strategy and you're thinking about new customers. That's when you need your brain to be able to get a little bit of strategy. You know, so for what Jake and I do, you know, you're building a website, you're doing some SEO, you're ordering things, you're all of these things. Strategy, I kind of summed up for myself as saving clicks. You know, like I'm going to build this website and it's going to take me 100 clicks of my mouse. But if I can figure out how to get it done in 50 clicks, I can build two websites because a click takes an amount of time. You know, a click is a second, a click is a minute, a click is an hour, you know. And so strategy is squashing up that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that your time can be used more effectively, allowing you to effectively use that time on more customers. Joe, this show's granddaddy, enlightened me to the term, you know, it's really those terms that are just like so stupid that really stick with you because you hear those terms and you go like, oh, God, why didn't I think of that, you know? And he enlightened me to the term, I don't think he coined it, but trading dollars for hours.
Mm-hmm.
Or trading hours for dollars. And there's only so many hours in a day, and therefore there are only so many dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Joe, being the big thinker that he is, wants to move away from dollars for hours entirely. Me, being the worker bee that I am, took that a little bit more as efficiency. If I can make my hours more effective and really get, you know, I always come back to Bruce Lee, his conservation of energy, you know, why block when your block can also be a strike, you know, the most amount of things done with one yeah. move. And yeah. so the more you can really apply that, but you have to be able to think in order to do that. So if you can carve out a little bit of that, and then once you have that extra time, that's where your extra customers go. So it's like if you're sitting there going right now, I'm totally full and I can't do any more. Well, look at your money that you're bringing in every month And that is the amount of money that you're going to make for the rest of your life at best. You know, unless you think about strategy as a business owner and customers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you're saying to yourself, I can't take it on anymore, well, then you just, you hit the escape velocity.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I think those, the two things you mentioned, the way Joe thinks and the way you think, they're pretty much exactly the same. But for the point where you say, well, you know, I'm completely strapped, even with all the strategies, this is the max. And then you hire someone else to take over that. And then you hire someone else to take over that. So that's kind of like, I mean, it's a continuum, but you kind of have to make the choice. Do I want to scale up from here, or am I satisfied with the fact that I'm a pretty efficient guy right now?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The funny thing about Joe is, like, he's all about providing his clients with no risk marketing situations, but he does this while taking risk himself. You know, so it's like he alleviates his clients of having to take risks by taking his own risks. Because, like, he and I, it's like, I could use an employee right now. But until I have the capital to get the employee, I don't know if I can do it. But mm-hmm. but Joe would do it, and he would make it happen, you know. So, you know, I'm kind of impressed by that.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess the message out there is be like Joe. You know.
I should add one more thing. So Joe suggested a book for reading. And if you're at that point in your business where you're at the point where you can't really come up with a better strategy, you're kind of plateauing, check out the book Mastering the Rockefeller Habits by a guy named Vern Harnish. And he kind of outlines a really pragmatic set of tools that you can use to scale up your business. And it's an outstanding book. Check it out.
Yeah, we were talking about it in a meeting the other day, and I made a note of it, and I forgot to get my hands on a copy. I might do that because I want to be a part of the conversation.
But it's a 4-hour audiobook, so it's brief.
Oh, that is brief. So really, that's where you need to start. Are you in the mindset that you are going to grow your business? Are you in the mindset that, you know, a lot of people want to hire their marketer and say, I don't know, just do it for me while I go do this work? No. You have to be a little bit involved. You don't have to be hugely involved. But the more efficiently you're involved, the better. So get yourself in the mindset that you're going to start thinking a little bit about strategy. Strategy is how more effectively can I do my job in order to free up some time. And that you're going to start thinking about customers, and that is, how am I going to get more customers in? You're listening to The Being Found Show. Come on back, and we're going to talk about a couple of tools with getting started as well.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Hey, you getting hungry?
Yeah, hungry as a bear.
Oh, yes, the eternal question. What's for lunch?
Fast food?
Nah, I want something that didn't come in a bag.
Someplace fancy.
No, I want a place that has a down-home atmosphere, serves good portions, and has consistently good food.
My friend, you just described Black Bear Diner. They started just up the road in Mount Shasta. They have carried that feeling of home-cooked meals at a great price to more than 100 locations.
They're on Hilltop Drive in Redding. What's that?
It's time to feed the inner bear.
Black Bear Diner.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Are you entertainment-minded? Do you like to hear people discuss fun topics?
Well, we talk about all things pop culture.
From movies and TV to books, music, games, and everything in between. But with a twist, everything is not very current.
We'll talk about things we recently discovered and have decided we just have to share our thoughts on.
Which gives us the title of our show.
We're a little behind.
Hosted by us, Chris and Jen Gomez.
Join us every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 p.m. for We're a Little Behind. Right here on Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460 AM.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
All right, welcome back to the Being Found Show. We are talking about not only businesses and helping businesses find an online buying market, but specifically we're talking about getting started with the right mindset for your marketing process. And so whenever we talk about a marketing process or some sort of specific task, it's good to follow it up with some tools. And I sort of made a little list here, but Jake, what if somebody were starting a business, what would be the first tool? Or if you were starting a business, and I'm not talking marketing, I guess it might be marketing and business, but any kind of business, mm-hmm. what would be the first tool that you suggested to them?
Easily Google Analytics and Google Webmaster. One, they're free.
They are free.
Two, you may not understand everything right off the bat, but you definitely want to have that historic collection of analytics on the website for when you do figure out how to read
right.
what Google's telling you. It's
right, right. Collecting the data so that you can historically look back at it.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to know how to understand it now, but in the future you have to have something to look at.
And yes, and it's so comprehensive that if you decide to get maybe a paid tool down the road, they're going to use that data probably. They're going to ask to hook up to that because Google's, they're just a very capable data collection company.
Right, and easily the largest search engine.
Oh, yeah.
By and large, yeah. You know, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
No?
Given all the project, I agree with you. I totally agree with you, and it was on my short list here as well. I thought you were maybe going to say Trello doing all the, or some sort of project management
yeah.
software so that you can track all your stuff.
Mm.
You know, that's where I thought you were going to go.
You know, that's an important one, too. I went marketing and not project management. But, mm-hmm. yeah, Trello is another great tool. I mean, it lets you set up a little checklist, and you get to move your cards down as you complete your tasks.
Yeah, we've talked about it here on the show, and I think I referred to it as fun. You know, I mean, it's as fun as project management can be. You know, you're
yeah.
dragging your thing around, changing some colors, you know, I mean.
And it's simple. It's like a felt board simple.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what makes it so effective, I think.
Yeah. So here on my short list, of course, I had analytics, and for precisely that reason. The reason why I was thinking maybe not on the analytics was And don't get me wrong, when I say maybe not, I mean as the first tool that I give to people. Yes, if you have a website, you need to have analytics on there, probably prior to launching it.
Yeah.
Was because it can be so complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is. There are people out there with whole careers making six figures that really couldn't tell you how to fix your computer at all, but they know analytics like nobody's business,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it can be very complex, but if you learn the little simple things, you can really find some important stuff there to help your business and to sort of see how well you're doing. So when you do hire a marketing company, you can say, all right, well, we're doing good here. You mm-hmm. know, and that was the tool that I also came up here on my short list was Bright Local.
Yep.
Because Bright Local is inexpensive. I think I have the second tier Bright Local account. I think I pay like $35 a month. So I think it's probably about $20 for somebody who's just doing one to three locations or something like that. You know, of course, I'm pumping my clients through there, so I'm paying the next level up.
Mm-hmm.
But what it really gives you as a business owner is you put in your keywords, and it tells you where you're showing up. And that's absolutely great. It's a simple, quantifiable number. The problem with that, I think, is that in the long run, businesses enjoy that simple quantifiable number, and they become too dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll start to see that drop, but they don't understand that in their analytics, their time and conversion and traffic is all up. But just because the one word that they were hoping to rank for isn't ranking, you know, they're not really understanding that we're not trying to rank for a word. We're trying to rank for whatever people are searching for to get to us.
Yeah, to use any tool in a vacuum could be dangerous.
Right.
You should definitely consider it with other tools.
Right. So the tool that I came up with as being my number one tool that I would suggest any business owner get in the beginning is a whiteboard. I know it's not very fancy, and I know it's not very technological, but I would say a dry erase whiteboard.
Yeah.
They are invaluable, and they are constant reminders of what needs to be done and what you should be doing. So what you need to do is get yourself a whiteboard, and at the top of it, write, stop thinking about only operations.
That's right.
And then you will have fulfilled this whole segment here, you know. A whiteboard is like a place for you to brainstorm. And really, that's kind of what you need to be doing. So down one side, you put the tasks you need done for that day because you got to be realistic. Days have to get tasks done. I got a big mm-hmm. list of it when I get home. I'm supposed to be figuring out something with JavaScript. I have no idea how to do, but I can guarantee by the end of the day I will because it's on my whiteboard.
Yeah.
You know. But on the other side, give yourself some space to dream, you know. I don't know if you remember, but back when you started your business, you had some dreams about success.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't so beaten down by the day-to-day operations and, you know, the ankle biters that are running around everybody's feet. You know, you had some dreams. Those dreams are still there, and those dreams are viable. You just need to put aside a little bit of time in order to pursue them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. What are some other tools, you know, people would need to track their, like CRM, you know, might be good for some types of businesses. You know, it really kind of comes down to what types of businesses you are. Service-based business, CRMs can be very important.
You know? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But a product-based business, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, a CRM is still important, but a product is a little less based on the interaction.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
I think we've brought this up in the show before, but if you're a product-based business, considering a tool like MailChimp to create a mailing campaign, tracking whether or not people are abandoning their carts.
Right. Yeah, that is. Yeah, you talked about this a couple of shows back, and I really kind of was a little bit blown away. So basically you're connecting your, I don't know, it's about to get techie here. You're connecting your API to MailChimp so that they're seeing what the interaction is from your registered users.
Yeah, and just so everyone's aware, I'm the least techie person in my industry, and what an API key is basically a secret code that connects one thing to another, so no one can steal it.
That was very techie, Jake.
Was it?
I don't know.
I just said secret code, like secret I'm in World code. War II.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. That's funny. All right, so today we ran over some news. We ran over those crazy millennials, or the new millennials known as Generation Z. What's going to come next? Or is that full? Is that for full circle? Are we going
yeah,
generation?
If we're going with spreadsheets, I think AA is next.
AA so. Is next. You know, there was a Dr. Seuss book about the letters of the alphabet beyond Z, and I remember it was one of my favorites as a kid. And about the marketing process, you know, you've been listening to the Being Found show. Thank you for checking us out. Check us out online at beingfound.com.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Greg Clugston in Washington. The top U.S. diplomat says President Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin should meet as planned on Monday, despite new charges that 12 Russian intelligence officers hacked into Democratic email accounts during the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he's confident the meeting will put America in a better place. Meanwhile, the president is scolding the Obama administration for not responding aggressively enough to the Russian interference during the last presidential campaign. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is in custody after returning from London to face a 10-year prison sentence on corruption charges. His return to Pakistan came amid the country's troubled election campaign season. Yesterday, more than 130 people were killed in two separate attacks. A government safety panel is urging automakers to speed up the replacement of potentially deadly Takata airbags.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says its leadership has met with 19 companies, urging them to accelerate the recalls. Automakers already missed a December deadline to replace the oldest and most dangerous airbag inflators. They're blaming consumers for not bringing cars in for repairs. The nonprofit Center for Auto Safety is criticizing NHTSA for not cracking down on automakers and not insisting there are more replacement airbags available. Takata's airbag explosions have been linked to at least 23 deaths worldwide and about 300 injuries. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Senate Republicans are eager to vote on the nomination of federal court judge Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court before the midterm elections. But many American voters in the middle say that they're not following it close enough to have a strong opinion. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The following is a true story. My name is David Bryant. When I was 37, my wife and I decided to get term life insurance through SelectQuote. Just 3 years later, I was diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Because of life insurance, the people I love most in this world will be protected no matter what happens to me. I know that the dreams I have for my family can still come true. Financial security, to stay in the home we became a family in, and for our children to be able to go to college. I reached out to SelectQuote because I wanted to share my story. If just one person purchases life insurance, I know I will have made a difference.
SelectQuote can find a 37-year-old male a $500,000 policy for under a dollar a day.
If there are people you care about, you need life insurance. It may be the single most important financial decision of your life.
Don't put off protecting your family. Get your free 800-671-7070. That's 800-671-7070. 800-671-7070. Or go to SelectQuote.com. This is a paid endorsement. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Not available in all states.
Authorities in Thailand say the 12 boys and their soccer coach who were rescued from a cave after an 18-day ordeal are expected to be discharged from the hospital next week. Today, video messages of the boys were shown at a news conference. They were wearing surgical masks to safeguard against infection. The boys are recovering well and eager to eat their favorite comfort foods. Doctors say they will still need to be closely monitored for physical and psychological effects. A California man has pleaded guilty to shooting a U.S. diplomat in Mexico.
Zia Zafar has entered a guilty plea in a Virginia federal court to attempted murder of an internationally protected person. He's also pleaded guilty to discharging a firearm during a crime of violence.
Correspondent Andrew Stewart reports that Zafar faces a maximum 20 years in prison for attempted murder. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Greg Clugston. People in the Mid-Atlantic region are being told not to touch the dangerous giant hogweed plant.
A teen landscaper's literal brush with what was believed to be the giant hogweed plant earlier this week left him with serious burns on his face. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports 17-year-old Alex Childress came in contact with the towering plant on Tuesday. He ended up with second and third degree burns to his face and left arm. Giant hogweed exudes a sap that can cause burns, blisters, and blindness. Jordan Metzger is a curator with Virginia Tech's Massey Herbarium. He said Friday that reported sightings of the giant hogweed plant have increased since its presence in Virginia was confirmed last month. Keith Peters, Washington.
At the World Cup, Belgium defeated England 2-0 today in the soccer tournament's third-place game. Tomorrow, Croatia and France will square off in the championship match. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Hello. Hello, my darlings, and welcome to Radio Wasteland, your show about the paranormal, the unexplained, and the nefarious. Your regular host, Chauncey, is off tonight. He was kidnapped by mysterious agents of the Shadow Government and is currently undergoing re-education at one of their many convenient secret outposts. He'll be back next week, although he will not be the same. My name is Sean, but lest you worry that my voice will be monopolizing your eardrums for the coming hour, don't. We're not alone. Author and recurring guest William Pullen from UFO Real was kind enough to come on with us here. He'll be discussing the recent Roswell Festival and other topics related to UFOs. William, do we have you on here with us?
I am here. And that's, fantastic. That scenario you just described sounds like something out of Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, you know, it's kind of an occupational hazard for us, yeah, conspiracy theory radio host, you know. You say the wrong thing, and then, you know, someone with an earpiece and mirrored shades is tapping you on the shoulder and ushering you into a van with tinted windows. But, you know,
we don't expect. About all that, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, we all know the risks, to be clear to any of our audience who might be convinced by what I just said. That is all a joke. I don't know where he is. He told me, but it wasn't very interesting, so I didn't assimilate that knowledge. He's on the road. I don't know.
Anyway, we're good to have him back next week.
Yes, we will. Re-educated and ready to spout the Illuminati party line.
You might be more right than you think. I don't know.
Maybe. As I said, I don't actually know where he is, so I might be coincidentally right about all of that.
Perhaps.
Yeah. All right, well, I do appreciate you coming on here. You know, it occurs to me we really should have had you on last week because I just found out today, 1 week ago, was World UFO Day, which I did not know at the time, but it would have been appropriate.
Yeah, it's. I wasn't aware of that date until about 5 years ago.
Really?
And I've still yet to...
July 2nd, yeah.
Yeah, I hear a definitive answer as to... well, let me rephrase that. I've heard several explanations as to why that date is your World UFO Day. And okay. none of them sounded really firm, so I just kind of go with it. But I'm with you. I didn't really know about it until recently. So,
okay, I just have to say, I love that because it is just so thoroughly typical that no one knows where this date came from. And there are varying theories, but none of them are all that convincing. Like,
no,
that's just perfectly apropos for a UFO day.
Yeah, it sounds like individuals trying to explain a certain UFO sighting.
Exactly.
Which will remain unnamed, but it's called Roswell. There's a whole list of explanations, but for me personally, every day is UFO day.
Well, that is true. And I do want to launch into the Roswell stuff in the next segment here, but... since this first segment is usually just warming up the radio and all that, I just want to ask you, before we move on, a question that's been on my mind. So, I'm a pretty amateur ufologist here, if you can, you know, really even call me that. I've only really been following what's going on in UFO land for about a year. So it seems to me, as a layman, that 2018 is a pretty unprecedented year in terms of the willingness of mainstream news outlets to report on UFO-related events without... you know, feeling the need to code everything they say in a thick layer of irony or ha-ha, this is just a joke style reporting. I'm wondering, do you think we're seeing a paradigm shift here in the way organizations report on UFO research, or is this just kind of a temporary blip?
Well, you know, it's definitely been a problem through history that the UFO issue has not been treated seriously by media outlets, the major media outlets, certainly here in the United States. So that's changed as of late.
Exactly. Yeah.
About the last calendar year. I think it'll keep going in that direction. It seems that the media outlets, the major media outlets, have really made an effort to treat it with more respect. I don't know if that's going to lead to anything else beyond that, but it's definitely a refreshing change from what's been going on for 60-some-odd years where reporters report this issue with a tongue-in-cheek approach.
Right. I can only imagine. And you've been following this for how long?
Since the late 80s.
Since the late 80s. So, yeah, you've had your share of not being taken seriously, I can only assume.
Oh, sure, yeah. I've been attacked and ridiculed at times. I just blow it off. I mean, it is what it is. It's a situation that really isn't going to change. But I'll use this term loosely, journalists cover the UFO issue as seriously as they would any other issue. That's where we're seeing change.
Yeah.
Whether that leads to anything else, we shall see. But it's nice to see. It's nice to turn on a TV and see a serious UFO related story as opposed to a story that's garners laughter in the studio after the story's done. So
right.
It's a good change. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. What do you think has kicked that off? Is it mostly the Washington Post story last year, or you were saying last calendar year? So even before that. It sounds like you're saying this has been changing.
I got a feeling that there were some outlets that were, I guess I could put it this way. It's been a gradual shift. I recall I saw a story on Fox News 4 or 5 years ago where they ran a story on the anniversary of the Pascagoula abduction, which was in, I think, October of 73. They ran a story on the anniversary of that UFO sighting. I'd never seen a UFO story seriously reported on Fox News.
Interesting.
So that transpired. But then all the media coverage around the Pentagon UFO story and all the surrounding issues around that came late last year. And that really, that has certainly at least made the issue more approachable in a serious way.
Right.
Yeah.
When...
I think that really, you know.
When reading about the 2004 sightings, the grainy black and white Tic Tac videos, those three videos, I'm just continually surprised reading those and having the article seemingly be completely serious. Like for me, who's not been following this, it's extremely surreal to just look at my daily news and find people reporting seriously on UFOs.
Yeah, it's a total change of pace.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I take the UFO issue very seriously myself.
Of course, yeah.
I'm not used to seeing it reported seriously, like it has been as of late. And it's a welcome change, regardless of whether the story comes out to be, whatever the explanation is to the story, it's still an unidentified flying object, and it's being reported as seriously as an economic crisis or a terrorist act or what have you, that's
right.
A refreshing change compared to the last 60 years. That's a big deal. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier whether or not that leads to anything else. By anything else, do you mean like a broader disclosure by governments or?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever develops and transpires after this, I'm a cautious person, so I'll wait and see what happens. But it's at least the coverage has changed. Whether that ends up with a kind of a snowball effect and other things transpire beyond that, that'd be great. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. We're coming up on our first break here. When we come back, I want to ask about the Roswell Festival and everything that went on there. You are listening to Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
Hey, it's Bad Bob, producer for Free Fire Radio, the very best way to start your day in the North State. Every Monday through Friday from 7 to 9, Carl and Linda Bott bring you what's happening in our community, from politics to entertainment and the issues you care about. If you like what you're hearing, won't you please tell a friend that local live radio is what we're all about? I love my job. Tune in and find out why, right here, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., on the home of Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460.
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we offer up the latest tech news you can use. Hi, it's Bob Belongi. It's even easier to listen to the show now that we're on iTunes. You'll find our archives and articles at boomertechradio.com, and the show is streamed live at kcnr1460.com. We review the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and make sure you are up to date on the latest tech trend. Boomer Tech Radio, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on KCNR 1460, and now available as a podcast on iTunes.
I'm here with Mike of Estate Grant and Things. Hey, Mike, so I gotta ask, what's with the and things?
And things is anything that we can make with granite and metal.
So you're saying it's gonna last?
It's forever furniture.
Wow, did you come up with that one?
Absolutely. The and things are dining room tables, wine bistros, fire pit patio tables, and our ever-popular granite-lined roasters. Really, anything you can imagine inside or out.
You know, that store-bought stuff has to be replaced every few years. You know, it gets hot up here.
That's why we call it Forever Furniture. You can will it to your children.
Mike, with Estate Granite and Things, our builder of choice, thinking completely out of the box.
The first time I walked into my new kitchen, I was amazed. But after, I started to notice all the little things that make my kitchen unique. From the tile backsplash to the seams in the granite, everything was truly a work of art.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard. Estate Granite Things, completely out of the box. Or visit us at estategranite.com.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
A jury deliberation room filled with 12 men, ordinary people just like you or me who must decide the outcome of a murder trial. Experience for yourself as dramas run high, tempers flare, and personal prejudices are tested, all while the life of one 19-year-old man hangs in the balance.
Riverfront Playhouse is proud to present 12 Angry Men, written by Reginald Rose, directed by John Welsh. Tickets at riverfrontplayhouse.net or at Enjoy the Store on Placer Street in Reading. Showtimes Friday and Saturday, 7:30, Sunday matinees at 2, June 16th through July 7th.
July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile found sometime last week.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. We're talking with William Pullen about the Roswell Festival and all other things UFO. Yes, that's right. We're covering literally every UFO-related topic in this hour, so stay tuned. William, you were at... Yeah, I may have bitten off more than I can chew there, but don't tell anyone
no,
that.
No. We're good. We're good? I really don't mind talking about UFOs, so.
Right. Well, that's perfect. So you were at the Roswell Festival this last weekend. Is that right? In
New
Mexico,
yes, sir.
Yeah. So I'm actually not too familiar with the Roswell Festival. I'm familiar with AlienCon. Is this a similar sort of setup? Speakers, panels, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it pretty much is. The speakers / presenters are organized by the UFO Museum there in Roswell.
I see.
And the remainder of the events are organized by the city. Mm-hmm. So it's like two entities working together loosely hand in hand to produce the festival. But it's kind of the same scenario. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how was it? I'm jealous. I wish I could have gone.
It was great. It was great. I don't do any of the festivities outside the museum.
Mm-hmm.
I just attend as many presentations as I can and talk
right.
with these authors or researchers, some of which are really good friends that I see once a year.
Yeah.
So, it came out great. It was a wonderful, well, the festival was 3 days. But my good friend Don Schmidt arrived basically a week before the festival, so I got to talk to him and spend some time with him before the festival started.
Right.
I
wanted to ask you about his research in the next segment coming up here, so
okay.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we had a pretty impressive list of guest speakers at the conference. You know, you've got Stanton Friedman, who's the original civilian investigator at Roswell, Stephen Bassett, lots of big names. Are there any highlights from the conference that really stood out to you while you were there?
Well, on a personal note, I've never met in person Stephen Bassett.
Mm-hmm.
And I cordially disagree with his stance on disclosure. I don't feel it's going to happen, and he feels it is. And we've exchanged emails before, but I met him in person, attended his presentation Sunday morning, and that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. The Stanton Friedman retirement ceremony, which was basically all weekend, was very emotional, especially toward the end.
Yeah.
But it was a series of great, great moments and memories. So it's a wonderful weekend. I'm already counting the days till next year. So.
Yeah. Yeah, those were just the two names that kind of popped out at me when I was perusing the guest list. But what were some of the various topics that were being discussed in these presentations? Was it like people presenting their research?
Well, Stan Friedman as he's been thinking about the idea of how these extraterrestrials are conquering the vast distances it takes to get here to Earth. He's taken an astronomical approach. Don Schmidt and Tom Carey were covering a lot of the issues surrounding the cover-up of the event. Frank Kimbler, who works, he's a professor of geology at North New Mexico Military Institute up the street from the museum. He strictly takes a scientific approach to recovering or attempting to recover physical evidence from the debris field.
Nice.
And his presentations reflect that. So it runs the whole gamut, but each speaker had a different take on the general scenario of Roswell. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I've always kind of wondered about the first topic you mentioned, the conquering the vast distances and involved in that sort of thing. Is that something that ufologists can reasonably come up with conclusions about? I always got the impression that it was something that was just beyond the scope of what we knew about these sightings at this point, that we couldn't even begin to guess. But,
well, I guess since none of us are extraterrestrials, and we don't have any, we believe none of us are. We'll see what happens to that. But since we haven't conquered the stars, we haven't traveled to anywhere other than our own moon.
Mm-hmm.
We have no perspective. We are blissfully unaware of the technology that they have. But Mr. Friedman is a nuclear physicist, so
right.
He's. As far as his education and his background, he's very qualified to speak on astronomical issues such as distance, speed, time, those kind of variables. So, so he's one of the ufologists in the UFO community is very qualified to speak in that direction. And I think that's why he focuses on that a bit, because he has a different perspective as opposed to some other researchers that focus on different things. So,
interesting.
Well, makes him a case for it.
Yeah, well, what did he have to say about that? Did he have any theories as to how it's possible?
He basically said a lot of scientists are they're chauvinistic toward the human race. They apply mm-hmm. our standards to the ETs, saying, well, they can't. How did they get here from there? If you travel closer and closer to the speed of light, your ship gets heavier and heavier, which means it takes infinite energy to drop your ship, which is theoretically an impossible scenario. But you can't. Throw away the data. The data shows that alien visitation is happening. So yeah. Somehow they're getting here. But a lot of scientists in the main scientific community are blissfully, they're unaware of UFO data. So they're making statements that are, for lack of a better term, ignorant. Because when you make a statement, when a scientist certainly does, makes a statement about a scenario where that scientist has not done the background, to become aware of the data surrounding that scenario, their statement is an error or can be an error or certainly ignorant of what's transpiring. So, whereas Mr. Friedman is very aware of the vast majority of the data and
mm-hmm.
Certainly somehow they're getting here. And it remains to be seen how. But Friedman, as Stanton, has a pretty open mind as to the possibilities. And a lot of scientists assume, well, we can't get there. How can they do that? They're assuming that the ET's level of technology is the same as ours, or the age of their civilization is the same as ours.
Right.
Those are variables we have no idea about. So, but clearly they're visiting. So somehow they're getting here, and we don't know how.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really big point. Good point that you bring up there that
in a way, not being familiar with all of this data is detrimental to mainstream science as well, because if you're someone who's thinking about physical issues like FTL travel and things related to that, then you can't discount, hey, there's good evidence that there are other creatures who have mastered these technologies. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I recall back in the 70s, Carl Sagan and J. Allen Hynek, Dr. Hynek, had a debate, and I can't recall the forum. It was on television, network television. Mm-hmm. And Carl Sagan was attempting to sweep away the data using theories that had no data to back them up.
Right.
So he was making ignorant statements, and Dr. Hynek was simply saying, look, we have quality data, voluminous amounts of data that have to be explained. And the theories Mr. Sagan was putting forth wasn't explaining the data. So he was just throwing out ideas, which certain scientists in the mainstream do, and a few don't. A few of them actually are aware of the data and make more informed statements and more informed speculations as to what might be happening. So,
right. Yeah, the data is definitely more compelling than, you know, if you're a typical scientist, probably you think, I don't have to be familiar with this because I already know there's nothing there. Because none of my colleagues are taking it seriously. And it's just this vicious cycle of people not taking the data seriously because they think they don't have to.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head right there. Yeah, they're assuming, they're going with the status quo of the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. They're not taking it seriously. So they just brushed away.
Yeah. Yeah, and we talked about in the first segment that changing a little bit in the media. now I'm just going off of that, we're getting off topic, but I don't care. Have you seen any signs of that changing in the mainstream scientific community? Because it seems like that's a pretty hard nut to crack. I haven't seen a lot of change in there.
Physicist, I'm going to butcher his name, Michio Kaku.
I believe
that's the name, how
you
pronounce it.
Love that guy.
He makes pretty objective statements about the UFO phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
He entertains potentialities. He does not brush away the data. And I've heard him make statements basically making the case that we don't know what's out there. Therefore, we can't assume or make any statements of fact concerning what's out there because we don't know. We don't know how advanced they are. We don't know who they are. We don't know how they get there. We can't assume anything because that's an uninformed statement. And that's something some other scientists, and I have their names in my head, won't say. They brush away the data. They brush away. They say, well, where are they all? Where's this, that, and the other? And that's fine. Everyone has their own opinion, but it's okay being skeptical. I'm a skeptic myself, but a skeptic as far as when I hear something, I want to see the data. And if the data shows something anomalous happened, I'm there. I'm good. Let's investigate it.
Yeah.
But some skeptics are hardened and refuse to look at the data at all. That's not healthy for anybody. So,
mm-hmm.
But if the media takes the UFO issue more seriously, then hopefully the scientific community will start to take it more seriously. And that's been a big issue. The UFO community and the whole UFO issue is not taken seriously by anybody, including some individuals in the UFO community. It's horrible. And hopefully that'll change. It needs to change.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're coming up on our next break here. I want to ask you in the next segment about Donald Raymond Schmidt, who couldn't be here tonight, but his research sounds really fascinating, and I want to know a little bit about it.
Okay.
So, when we come back, Donald Raymond Schmidt.
Throughout the academic world, the medical world that is known throughout the Air Force, that the air intelligence has in its possession.
Tobacco and Brew has been a sponsor here on KCNR 1460 since we started the station 8 years ago. A long-standing Reading tradition, Tobacco and Brew is locally owned, backs our veterans, and does so much more for this community. It's located at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Check out their new lines, new products, new briar pipes, and of course, the famous walk-in humidor. Come in and see the newly remodeled Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive, open 7 days a week.
I'm Dr. Nancy Sutton Pierce, the host of the Conscious Living Show, every Saturday, 11 to noon, here on KCNR 1460. You'll laugh, cry, and perhaps be shocked by my frank and honest conversations. I often team up with my husband, Dr. Mark Pierce, and no one makes me squirm or giggle quite like he can. We are the yin-yang, east-west, of most topics, yet you can always feel the love and respect between us. Visit DrNancySuttonPierce.com to keep this conversation going.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
In the 40s, Reading Cab and Yellow Cab merged, and Reading Yellow Cab was born. A lot has changed since then. The town has more than tripled in size, and so have they. Through the decades, they've served Reading with generations of trustworthy drivers, family men and women, treating their customers with the respect and professionalism they'd expect for their own families. When you need to get to or from the airport or the train station, perhaps, Reading Yellow Cab is there for you. When you need a safe ride home, need to do some shopping, or want someone to shop for you, call Reading Yellow Cab at 222-1234.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kara Tennant with CARE Animal Hospital, and I'm inviting you to join me on the Carl and Linda Morning Show. We will be discussing all of Reading's local pet needs and how to keep your pet happy, healthy, and safe. CARE Animal Hospital is a local veterinary clinic located on the corner of Hilltop Drive and Lake Boulevard. Make sure your best friend has the best possible care today.
Join Dr. Kara Tennant on Free Fire Radio on Friday, July 20th, right here on KCNR.
With the changing of seasons, maybe it's time for a change for your family. And Palomar Builders, your ultimate home, invites you to discover River Point. River Point, by Reading's largest home builder, Palomar Builders, is located in South Reading. These quality-built homes include large, deep lots surrounded by mature oak trees featuring RV parking, energy efficiency, exceptional interior and exterior features. And just wait until you see the kitchens. Designer kitchens, Palomar Builders has spared no expense in the room you spend much of your time in. They feature granite countertops plus many other quality amenities and your stylish master suite. With its tree-lined streets, River Point provides quality living at reasonable pricing. Discover River Point in South Reading by Palomar Builders, your ultimate home. So make plans to come see the beautiful model home at River Point in South Reading. For more information, contact Debbie Morgan, Coldwell Banker, CNC Properties at 604-2127. River Point in South Reading with Palomar Builders, your ultimate home.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. We're speaking with William Pullen about the Roswell Festival and all things UFO. So, William, you mentioned earlier Donald Schmidt. I always want to say Donald Raymond Schmidt. I don't know why I want to say all three of his names, but it just rolls off the tongue really well.
It sounds very formal.
Exactly, it does. Donald Raymond Schmidt, yes. So he was a panelist at this festival, and you mentioned on Facebook that you're looking for the opportunity to share some thoughts about his research here. I admit I'm not particularly familiar with his work, but what is it exactly that he's been doing?
Well, Stan Friedman was the original researcher. Mm-hmm. He broke the story, or the story broke as a result of his work, I believe it was 1978. In the late 80s, Don Schmidt was, and he had been working at the Center for UFO Studies, for Alan Hynek for over 10 years.
Really?
Heineken passed away by 86, I believe. And Schmidt and asked Dr. Kevin Randall to take a look at the Roswell case. And they initially made their first trip to Roswell back in 89. And their research progressed from then. They worked together till the mid-90s. And then Schmidt ended up, or Donald Raymond Schmidt, I should say, teamed up with Tom Carey, I believe, about the late 90s. And it produced three or four, maybe perhaps five books on the Roswell case. Pretty grounded researcher. He's a personal friend, but I'm trying not to be biased here. But pretty grounded researcher. Unlike a lot of researchers in the UFO community, he has the ability to admit when he's wrong, and he has done that on several occasions, and has debunked some evidence which previously was in favor of the extraterrestrial theory for Roswell. He found some witnesses with Randall. I can think of Frank Kaufman offhand, who testified about certain things, and through his own efforts, Schmidt proved that testimony wrong years later. So he's not a biased researcher, so and a good friend. So,
but you mentioned the extraterrestrial theory for the Roswell event. Here's how much I know about this. I'd always assumed that was kind of the only strain of thought out there about this particular event because it was just so bizarre. But it sounds like is it actually the main thought about Roswell in the UFO community that it was extraterrestrial?
This is interesting. I'm going to get negative emails from what I'm about to say.
Well,
there's a whole list of explanations. Some individuals believe the mogul balloon theory, which the Air Force put out. Some individuals believe it was Nazi technology. Some believe it was a regular weather balloon. Some believe nothing out of the ordinary happened at Roswell. There's a couple of members in my group. I remember writing a poll question in my group, You For Real, and that's a cheap plug for my group, but a couple of individuals stated in a poll question they believe nothing transpired at Roswell at all.
Oh,
in any way, shape, or form.
You know, I actually remember that. Now that you're saying that, which is interesting.
Yeah. But what has happened over the years is that physical piece of the craft. So the extraterrestrial theory cannot be proven as such. But the vast majority of the evidence, quality testimony, the reaction of the military, the coverage by the newspapers, all the other possibilities to explain Roswell have kind of been debunked. All that's left is extraterrestrial. In my mind, it's mainly, okay, you've got military testimony, a core of which is held up under intense scrutiny. You have the reaction of the military. The military reacted like they had never come across this scenario at all.
They didn't know what they were doing. You know.
Yeah.
Right. They got there and they're like, oh, my God. And then you see a coordinated response a few days later.
Yeah, so my feeling is that the evidence, that's all kind of left on the table, extraterrestrial. But again, you can't prove it without a piece of crap. That's what Frank Kimbler is attempting to find, a piece of physical evidence. But it's still an open case. I think among the researchers, they have varying percentages as far as how much they feel extraterrestrial. And Doc Schmidt actually is around middle range there. He's not totally convinced it is.
He's not totally. Yeah. That's interesting.
No. I think it's certainly the most common or the most popular theory explaining Roswell.
Right.
ET theory.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly what's associated with Roswell in the popular consciousness.
Yeah, a little bit.
Hence
the festival.
Hence the festival and the whole Roswell Museum setup. You mentioned that it was an open case a minute ago and that people are still looking for hard evidence. Now, this Roswell crash was a little while ago. It seems like every year that passes, the odds of really figuring out what happened there are getting slimmer. But is that the case, or are we finding new stuff all the time about
this case? From a testimony standpoint, it is. Applying my own standard, I only accept first-hand testimony. I don't accept anything else other than that.
Right.
And so first-hand witnesses are pretty much all gone.
Exactly.
So you're left with acquirement of military documents, which hasn't happened, although there's a few documents, the infamous MJ-12 documents come to mind, which refer to Roswell or refer to it in a kind of a roundabout way. Newspaper coverage. You have the military's reaction. I keep going back to that because the military acted like it wasn't an average day event. You don't close roads off to recover a weather balloon. You don't send a weather balloon to Wright Field to have a reverse engineer. Because even by the Air Force's own explanation, they feel as they're advocating that it's a mobile balloon. Well, that was a secret operation, but none of the technology was secret. It was over-the-counter materials. So there's no reason to send that to get reverse engineered. And that makes no sense.
Right.
What does make sense is if something out of the ordinary crashed, you would send it to Wright Field. And certainly something extraterrestrial qualifies. But again, you can't prove it. It can be very frustrating. Yeah, but it's now a quest to recover physical evidence. And I think some could still be out there. But you're right. It does get harder as time goes on. But
In fact, I think you mentioned that the last time we were on here, that there were potentially materials from Roswell that were snapped up by the Air Force, you said?
It was the Army Air Force at the time, when this happened.
That are, potentially sitting in a warehouse somewhere or wherever they end up. I don't know.
the testimony is that the Army Air Force sent personnel out there to recover the debris that was left. And it's a safe assumption that it was sent to Wright Field.
Right.
On the way to Wright Field, it was a stop off at Carswell Air Force, or Carswell Field, I should say. But when a craft, let's eliminate extraterrestrial. Let's just talk about an airplane. When an airplane blows up or crashes, there's innumerable numbers of small pieces of metal that are embedded in the ground. There's no way to pick up every single piece of metal. There isn't. Some metal will wash away with storms. Some metals will be covered up by plants and be deposited in cracks and crevices in the ground. It's kind of, you look at the universe, what are the chances that we're the only life in the universe with all the billions of planets? Probably zero. There has to be someone else out there. Obviously, because the number is dictated. Well, you look at the Roswell case, there are probably millions of pieces of metal or whatever the ship was made out of, or whatever crafts there was made out of. Did they pick up every single piece? Probably not.
So there might be still some just outstanding out in nature, you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably extremely small
probably difficult to identify, to say the least.
Yeah, Frank Coomber has recovered 8 to 12 small pieces of metallic substance, which are somewhat anomalous in nature, but testing is not cheap.
And
he's found some things that are slightly anomalous as far as the levels of the elements contained within them. So that doesn't prove they're extraterrestrial, but they don't really belong out there. So he's going in that direction. That's a good way to go. So.
Right. We had a researcher on a few weeks ago talking about the Bob White artifact, talking about the difficulty of testing to see.
Yeah, it is.
How? I imagine that's only a much larger concern when you're talking about minute metal shards rather than a whole object.
Yeah, because, from the standpoint of how large or how small these pieces are, when you're testing these pieces, you don't have a lot to test.
Right, exactly.
They're smaller than a pinky nail. But that's because the witnesses are passing away so quickly because of Father Time. The only angle to take is an attempt to recover something that was out there, test it, and find out if it's an isotope of something that's not of this Earth. That's really the only angle that's left.
Right. Yeah.
Unless documents are released all of a sudden, then the government is not going to do that.
You mentioned that the pieces recovered were somewhat anomalous. What does that mean in this case?
He had them tested to find out the levels of iron, aluminum, titanium, phosphate, the different elements that are contained within, and he compared them to normal everyday items that were present in 1947. Aluminum cans, military buttons, bullets, things that may have been out in the field in the late 40s, because it was near an airbase. Well, it was 76 miles from an airbase, but
right.
Things that were existent in the late 40s. And the metal does not match up to the bullets at the time. It doesn't match up to aluminum cans at the time. It doesn't it's just slightly anomalous, but it's not anomalous enough to really jumps out and grab you.
Right, it's not a smoking gun.
Yeah, so
and there's
but
been
it continues. More testing needs to be done. But Frank Kimbler goes out there on his summertime. He's off during the summer, so he goes out there on his own time and on his own dollar to do these things, and he gets a little funding from the museum.
Mm-hmm.
But these tests are not cheap, and he's got a family and a wife to support. So it's it's a scenario where he does it when he can, but. Again, that would be done if the scientific community would treat this seriously. We would have access to all these facilities to test these things, but that's not the case. So we have to do that out of our own pocket, and that's not cheap.
Okay.
So,
we're right at the next commercial break here. When you come back, we're talking to William Pullen about the UFOs.
You know, this time of year in Shasta County, the need to heat your home is probably the last thing on your mind, right? Well, my friend SSD Oil says this is the ideal time to trade in your old monitor heater on a spanking new Toyotomi and save yourself up to $250. Your qualifying model monitor heater earns you a huge allowance on a Toyo stove that will keep you warm and cozy all winter long. This deal is as hot as a running sidewalk in summer. SSD Oil, 241-1167, 241-1167.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Received news that Chlorina and Sludge have been captured for impersonating spring water. Let's now go to our field reporter, Olzo Wet.
Once again, Bob the Drop saves the world from fake water and... Oh, here's Bob now. Bob, do you have anything to say?
Well, Chlorina and Sludge from Tapopolis are the worst. Why would you want wannabe water when you can have the best tasting water delivered right to your door? Anyone can get Mount Shasta spring water if they call us at 1-800-922-6227.
Pure and simple. Naturally, the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The View, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Are you looking to move on up to the east side? The east side of Reading has many, many things to offer, including the Palomar Experience. It's Highland Park in the beautiful east side of Reading. These high-quality luxury homes brought to you by Palomar Builders feature many luxury amenities, including green technology like radiant barrier roof sheathing, high-efficiency, quick-recovery gas water heaters, energy-efficient LED and fluorescent lighting, water-conserving toilets, faucets, and showerheads, and programmable irrigation systems. Exceptional exterior and interior features, including designer kitchens with granite slab countertops, stylish islands in some plans, and walk-in pantries with door. And the east side is close to shopping and to freeway access. To find Highland Park, just go north on Churn Creek, look for the signs to make a left on Bodenhammer, and you'll find the Palomar Experience. Highland Park, come see the model home. Contact Debbie Morgan from Coldwell Banker CNC Properties at 604-2127. For Palomar Builders, Highland Park.
This is Radio Wasteland. We're speaking with William Pullen about Roswell, all things Roswell-related, and UFOs. You know, a while back we had another ufologist on who we respected quite a bit. I cannot for the life of me remember who it was. I was going back through the archives to try to figure it out.
Oh,
but
was it Dennis Balthaser?
I don't think so.
Okay, you guys had him on a few weeks back.
Yeah, no, this was last year. This was earlier in our show. But so they mentioned, we just happened to bring up Roswell, and they mentioned that they were somewhat dismayed that Roswell had such an important place in the public consciousness because they felt there were other UFO sightings since then that were more convincing or more significant. But what's your feeling on that? Does the Roswell incident sort of deserve the reputation it has as the number one UFO incident people think of in the United States?
I think it's an important one, but the trouble is it's so far in the past.
Exactly.
It's certainly the elephant in the room. It takes a lot of the air out of the balloon. But there's a lot of quality cases that are much closer in time, that have testimony, that have some physical evidence that need to be looked at and have been looked at. But it kind of is what it is. I mean, I'm in my own group, I don't really cover anything Roswell related until about a month before the festival.
Right.
Because of that scenario. I try to attack other issues and other cases and it not ignore, but really kind of push aside Roswell until the festival arrives because it gets enough press as it is. And then, so I can see that point that is true. It does get a lot more coverage or it's known more widely to the public than other cases, certainly. But it's still a quality case, but it's just one of several anomalous events that have occurred that don't really have a concrete answer.
Right.
I guess that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
It seems like one of the things that sets the Roswell incident apart is really the fact that the government and military officials didn't have as clear of a plan for dealing with this kind of situation at the time, and now they do. And so
agreed.
Their reaction is a little bit more telling. Is that, do you think that's true?
I see that's a fair assessment because I agree with that. You know, there's, the name of the case is escaping me, but there's a case dated from the early 40s of a crash, UFO crash. And I don't feel that crash is legitimate because one, there's a shortage of witness testimony firsthand and physical evidence. Two, if that crash, the name escapes me now. I'll probably remember it tomorrow. But if that crash was legitimate, I would think the military's reaction to Roswell would have been different because
right.
The crash had already occurred.
Interesting.
But clearly, the military acted like they didn't know how to handle this scenario. I think that's one of the stronger. But again, that's not evidence per se. That's a feeling. We need evidence.
Right.
But it is what it is. I still think it's a strong case. It's not the amount of evidence the amount of strong evidence for Roswell is not as voluminous as it used to be. In the late 80s, early 90s, there were a ton of witnesses. So it was a very robust case. Now it's still strong, but it's not as robust. And that's because of quality work from guys like Don Schmidt and Tom Carey and Stan Friedman. They were able to weed out some testimony that was not legitimate. But there's still that solid core of evidence that something anomalous happened. So it's still important.
Yeah. What are some of the other cases that, you know, what are the Roswells of the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s? You know?
Well, there's the Socorro landing of April 64, which is an ultra witness case. It did have physical evidence. It involved Lonnie Zamora, who was a police officer. There was, of course, Rendlesham Forest in December of 80, which has been written about and is still a lively case. The Phoenix Lights of 1997.
Yes.
Stephenville, Texas. So all these cases are much closer in time. So certainly at least the witnesses, the majority of them are still alive to examine, to interview. And there's a lot of other cases that don't get as much press per se, but that have occurred since then, since Roswell. I mean, we're talking, you know, 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. That deserve a lot of examination. Although I am troubled, though, that as of late, there hasn't been really a big flap. There hasn't been a really big UFO event as of late. The last one I can recall is Stephenville in 2008. The last one that was really, really grab you and say, huh, what's going on? There hasn't been one since. And that's interesting by itself. So
Yeah, well, we're coming up on the end of the show here. As we do, I'd like to give you a chance to tell our audience how they can find out a bit more about you and how they can find a bit more about UFOs, if this is something they're interested in but don't really know about.
We can look up my group and page on Facebook. Is called You For Real, A Historical Review. Mm-hmm. The group is where I do my work, do case summaries, book reviews, poll questions, basically promoting an exchange of ideas and comments from people, a cordial exchange.
Right.
That's where they can look me up and find me there. The page, which has the corresponding same name, is where I advertise for other individuals I know in the UFO community to help promote their efforts and go from there. So that's where everyone can find me.
Okay. Before we finish up here, is there anything you would say to anyone who might be listening who is not very familiar with the evidence for UFOs and is maybe pretty skeptical? Is there anything you would say to someone like that to maybe sway them? Or
you know, if the individual is skeptical about the scenario, I think apply yourself. Go to a library. Go to different databases, different blog spots that present objective amounts of evidence. Kevin Randall has a great blog spot available. You can read the numbers of books that have been put out. And just educate themselves as far as what the data shows. And if they still don't believe in the reality of the UFO phenomenon, then at least they've made the effort to educate themselves. And that way that conclusion is at least an informed one. And go from there. But I think it pays dividends to simply know what's going on, know what's been reported, and make up your own mind as to what actually may be the cause of it. So that's a good thing.
All right. Well, William, as always, it's been a pleasure here. We're going to do a bonus segment after the show that archival listeners can find on our website. You've been listening to William Pullen on Radio Wasteland.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.